Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, let's talk about that beatdown last night in L.A. Lamar Jackson is your MVP. I know that nobody wins the MVP in November, and there's still a month of football left, but Lamar Jackson is your MVP. And I say that knowing what Russell Wilson has done with Seattle. I say that knowing what Christian McCaffrey and Michael Thomas are currently doing. I know all this. Lamar Jackson is your MVP. Give him the trophy right now. They could have stopped that game in the second quarter last night and handed him the hardware right then and there, and nobody would have cared. 264 yards from scrimmage, 9-for-9 passing, 3 TDs in the first half alone. 15 of 20, 5 touchdowns for the game. And the game for Jackson was barely more than 3 quarters before he sat down and called it a night. You know, the numbers themselves, as mind-blowing as they are, they still do not do this guy justice. Because the numbers, even the final score, 45-6, do not capture the complete and total humiliation that Lamar Jackson just inflicted on the LA Rams. That's a Rams team that is proud. A Rams team that was in the Super Bowl less than 10 months ago. That same Rams team looked like they did not belong on the same field as the Ravens last night. That same Rams team looked like they didn't belong in the same sport as the Ravens last night. That's how thoroughly they were dominated and humiliated by Lamar Jackson. They were playing, the Rams, for their entire season last night. They said as much coming in when they admitted it was a must-win game, and they still got carved. That's a Wade Phillips coach defense, and they had no idea what they were doing or what they were seeing. Jackson turned them inside out. They had no idea what they were doing or seeing. Eric Weddle said as much after the game, and you know how much I respect that guy. Weddle said, quote, "I kid you not, I wouldn't lie to you. Half the time, I didn't know who had the ball. And so they were getting through the line, and I had to go tackle them, so it just puts a lot of pressure on you." End quote. That does put a ton of pressure on you. The kind of pressure that no team is able to stop right now. The kind of pressure that makes Aaron Donald one of the most dominant players ever, one of the most impactful players ever, and he was a total non-factor last night. I'm telling you, you will not find another guy who prepares like Eric Weddle. And even he admits he and they were completely fooled by Jackson and the Ravens. So here's the thing. I'm going to run a couple of highlights right now. And then after that, we are going to do some work. Why don't we talk about that easy throw to Hollywood Brown for the opening TD.
Jackson wants to throw, fires across the middle. Touchdown, Hollywood Brown! And how fitting that Hollywood scores the first points in L.A.
Ravens radio. So they get out quickly. The last thing you want to do is let them jump on you early and have them play with the lead. That's exactly what happened because there was then a perfect throw to Hollywood Brown for a second TD.
Jackson takes the snap. Blitz pressure coming. Slings to the end zone. Hollywood Brown has it. Touchdown number 2 for Hollywood.
Yo, it's cracking, Willie Snead.
Shotgun snap to the Raven quarterback. They bring everybody. Line drive pass. Thrown down the middle. Caught. Touchdown over the shoulder. Back of the end zone. Snead. Wow. They are a machine.
Westwood 1. They are a machine. That's 3. And Mark Ingram makes it 4.
Jackson takes the snap. Looks over the middle. Fires complete. Ingram in. Touchdown. Mark Ingram. And Mark Ingram breaking out the dance moves in the end zone.
Yeah, what about Willie Snead? You got anything else, Willie?
Shotgun snap. He rolls out of the pocket. Cocks his arm. Throws a pass. It's caught by Snead at the 5. Runs to the pylon near side. Touchdown! Ravens have done it again. A 5th touchdown pass for Lamar Jackson.
Westwood 1. 5 TD passes in just over 3 quarters. And throwing from every arm slot you can imagine. And some that you can't. And that doesn't even include his nearly 100 yards of rushing. I mean, that is a comical performance. It's absurd. It's stupid. Whatever you want to call it. It was that and much, much more. And one more thing. One more thing before I get back to Lamar Jackson. Did you happen to see this play?
Shotgun snap to Goff from the 30 of Baltimore. Line drive pass. Intercepted. Leaping pick right there by Peters at the 10. Runs across the field. Got a block at the 20. Runs to the far side of the field. The 30. Gets another block. Stops. Cuts the other way. Goes by the 30. Comes up the far side to the 35. And the former Ram has just picked off his former teammate Goff.
You think he enjoyed that very much? Do you think he enjoyed that very much? Nobody's ever enjoyed anything more than Marcus Peters enjoyed that pick, that celebration, and the opportunity to bark at Jalen Ramsey after the game and talk junk all the way back up the tunnel. But that play, and in fact all of last night, is a very good reminder that as good as Lamar Jackson is, and right now he is the best player in the NFL. He just is. Fact. But as good as Jackson is, Baltimore's defense is damn good too. Do not sleep on those guys. They get after you, they make you look bad, then they party in your end zone, and then they turn your house into their house. And they've just beaten Houston and LA by a combined score of 86-13. However, I said, let's get back to work really quickly. There are certain things that we're done talking about. Like we're done talking about the dopes who wanted Jackson to play running back or wide receiver. The dopes that said that he could never sling it from the pocket. Those dopes, many of whom are paid good money to assess NFL talent. Those dopes are like people who believe that the earth is flat, straight clueless, and centuries behind the times. But there are a couple of other groups that I do want to address here. The ones, for instance, that are still clinging to this notion that Jackson is a fad and that the NFL will figure him out next season and then this will be over. Yeah, doubt that. And if the league does, he'll probably just adjust back. He's only 22. He's barely started more than a full season of football in the NFL. But even if it is a one-hit wonder, although after the second half of last season and 11 games of this year, that one-hit wonder's game pretty long, right? But even if it is a one-hit wonder, what do you care? Why not just enjoy this? Why not? Why not roll with this and enjoy it because we've never seen anything like it? Why do some of you want this guy to fail so badly? After that first half, there was no reason to even watch that game. No reason to keep that game on, but everybody who likes football did because Lamar Jackson gave you a reason. He's in that Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers territory now, where you got to watch the guy every single week because there's a good chance that you're going to see something you have never seen before. And then there's that worst branch. The worst branch of people who not only want this guy to fail, they can't wait for him to get hurt. This special brand of loser who already has his, see, I told you so. I told you a guy like that could never last in the NFL. Tweets already saved in their draft folder. I'm like, what's wrong with you? Take a good look in the mirror on that one because you're practically rooting for this guy to get hurt. And that's about the worst thing that you can do. Look, I'm not saying you've got to pull for him. I'm not saying you have to love this guy, although anybody who comes in contact with him does. I'm not saying you have to root for him. You don't. But don't root for the guy to fail, or don't root for the guy, even worse, to get hurt. It just makes you look bad, not him. Especially when people around him say things like John Harbaugh told Jim Trotter, quote, "Everybody's been trying to define leadership for years, but you know it when you see it. Lamar has genuine, unabridged humility. We have a saying, humility with a hard edge. He has all that. He's one of the most humble and yet at the same time, most confident people I've ever met in my life. He's been raised the right way. Give his mom and his family a lot of credit." End quote. So you don't have to love Lamar the way his teammates and everybody in that organization love him. But just enjoy it. Even if he's doing it to your team, enjoy it because we've never seen anything like it. Again, calling this guy the best quarterback in the league does not do him justice. Even at this point, calling him the best player in the league probably does not do him justice because I'm not sure we've ever seen a guy like Lamar Jackson. Everybody wants to compare him to Michael Vick or Randall Cunningham. Even those two dudes could not do the types of things that Jackson is doing right now. Contractors everywhere rely on Ferguson for a wide variety of specialty products, tools, supplies, and services. Access all this and more with the new Ferguson app, which allows you to order on the go, find your nearest location, and quickly scan product barcodes for easy reordering. With tools like this, it is no wonder why. Ordering with Ferguson is the easiest part of your workday. Download right now and get started. Will Healy is my guest right now. Will, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's so good to have you. Listen, there's so much I want to talk to you about regarding this season and the year you're having. It's pretty amazing. But if we were to go back to Saturday, was there a hotter, more electric club in the country than Club Lit after you came from behind to beat Marshall and become bowl eligible for the first time in school history?
Absolutely not. I think the price tag on Club Lit right now is rising by the minute. We've had lots of people waiting at the door, and I think that I just added to it by putting the Lee Corso Norm hat on and taking my shirt off. So I definitely had a good time. I don't know about the players.
Hey, Will, I think they had a good time. I think everybody had a good time with that. And you actually answered my next question. I was going to say the video of that celebration is amazing. It might be my favorite video of the entire year, but I have to ask, and I think I know the answer, was that really you crowd surfing, shirtless, and wearing the mascot's head? That was you, right?
Absolutely. So I've been doing it without the Norm head on, and I thought this one deserved putting the mascot head on and going up there and doing a little crowd surfing. So my wife wants to know why that's my go-to, taking my shirt off, but to me, it's just enjoying success.
You got to enjoy that success. Will Healy is joining us. You have to. And I think to fully enjoy it and to fully appreciate this, we got to go back a little bit further, back to your days at Austin Peay. You were an assistant at Chattanooga before you took over as head coach of the Governors. That was a program that had really fallen on hard times when you arrived. So what did you see there that made you think that you could have success there?
Well, it was a 256-ranked job out of 256 Division I jobs. Mm. I think I was the only one who wanted it. And for me, I thought you could change a culture. I thought you could exceed expectations, and I thought we could recruit there. It was an area that I was very familiar with right outside of Nashville, and I thought I could take the staff that I would really want to be around to Austin Peay. So we'd lost 29. At one point in time, we got it up to 29 games in a row, 45 out of the last 46. We were the worst team in the country in 2016. And then we're fortunate enough to go 8-4 with three FBS losses to Cincinnati, Miami of Ohio, and Central Florida in 2017, win 8-1 versus FCS competition. And how about just last week, they won the OVC championship for the first time since 1977. So special place, unbelievable memories there. I made a lot of dumb decisions and was fortunate to be around a really good staff that helped turn that place around.
Will Healy joining us. You know, there's a lot of really interesting stuff in that answer. Again, that team had a 29-game losing streak, and then you went on, you had that 8-4 season, which is an amazing turnaround in and of itself. Now, there's a legend from your time at Austin Peay that you used to call radio stations just to get people to talk about you. Is that true? And if so, overall, what did you learn about the time that you were there at Charlotte? What was your biggest takeaway?
Yeah, I actually did. So one of the things was the Nashville audience was not really paying attention to what was happening 45 minutes up the road in Clarksville, which is kind of right on the Kentucky line. And so bringing the Nashville audience into it, making sure that recruits in Nashville, high school coaches in Nashville, fans in Nashville, you know, donors in Nashville knew what was going on. So, yeah, I would call in on the way home or whenever I was at work, you know, and find a way to plug Austin Peay and try to get people to come to games. And I think the relationship side that I learned there, when people know you, when there's a face behind the helmet or when there's, you know, they know the head coach or the staff, then they'll come pull for you. Even though there may be a Tennessee-Alabama game going on, if they've got a relationship with you, then you got a chance to get them out to the games. And we've done the same thing here. You know, Charlotte, our own program wasn't very important in our own community. And so getting out and getting involved, making sure people knew us, making sure people knew our players, whether that's on campus or off. Listen, we're not the biggest show on earth. It's not an ACC or an SEC game going on. We have to have relationships that make people want to come watch us play. So we had, at Austin Peay, we had the nation's longest losing streak and broken attendance record. We've been able to do some similar things here that have had great home field advantage and really good crowds.
Will Healy joining us. Also, there is this great story about how you got that job there in the first place. You had been a candidate, and then the school was going to go in a different direction before you got the chance to interview. And you asked about still getting that chance to meet with the AD, Mike Hill. He said he did not want to put you through some dog and pony show when they already knew who they were going to go with or who to hire. So what happened next?
Well, they were going to hire Mike Houston, who had won like 10,000 games at Citadel and James Madison and Lenore Ryan. I mean, he's an unbelievable coach. I totally understood why they were going to hire him. And then some things fell through at the last minute. Mike took the East Carolina job, and it was back open. A lot of people here have asked me, how does it feel to be runner-up? No, you got the job. And I'm like, I promise I was lower on the totem pole than runner-up to my wife, and we're married and we're really happy. So I don't care which choice I was. It's been an amazing experience. Going through that interview process was definitely different. I was very excited about the job I had at Austin Peay and excited about what we had coming back. So it wasn't like I was just looking. But anytime you're interested in a job and they're going with somebody else, it's a little bit difficult to handle. But when they came back and said, are you still interested? I said, Mike, I would walk to Charlotte to get a chance to get in front of you about this job. Listen, my resume is not good enough to get this job. I knew if I didn't get in front of somebody, I had no chance. And I needed to get in front of Mike Hill and sell my vision and who I could bring with me. And it's been a really good relationship since.
I think that is an amazing story. And then finally, Will, you had to also get in front of your players. And I love that story as well. When you met the players for the first time, you were introduced as head coach. You asked them, how many of you picked me? How many? Raise your hands. The only hand that went up was the athletic directors. Sure. And then you told the players, quote, well, I picked you. I picked you. I wanted you. I want to be your coach. What do you remember about that first meeting? And then how do you go about developing relationships with players who didn't pick you?
I remember walking in that meeting and seeing all of them look at me like, what's this 12-year-old going to do to help me get to the next level? And I get that in every home I go into, so I think that I wanted to start it off with the energy that I thought would become a standard around here. I wanted to make sure they understood some of the base fundamentals that were important to me. And I didn't want them to understand that, I know they didn't pick me, but I'm going to make sure that nobody in the country can give them a better student athlete experience than we can. And so I thought it was important at that time. Hey, we got a great opportunity to go develop some relationships with, whether it's TV, media, whether it's boosters. We're going to go to this press conference together, and you're going to shake everybody's hand that's there, and let's create some fans today. Let's start the right way. So I still tell them that. I told the seniors that this Saturday. The seniors in that room did not pick me. I picked them, and I just can't tell them how much I appreciate them buying into me and our staff, and I think some special things have happened because of that.
I'd finally say that, Will. I mean, back in December, you made the point that, quote, it's still not very cool to play football at Charlotte, and then less than 1 year later, you are bowl eligible for the first time. Club Lit is the hottest club anywhere. From where I'm sitting, it seems pretty cool to play football at Charlotte. Does it feel that way to you now?
Yeah, and we've definitely seen it in recruiting. I think there's a buzz going around. Obviously, you got to continue to win to keep that buzz going, but it's getting there. And I think that'll pay dividends, especially on the recruiting trail. But it's even with the students here. You know, it's fun and cool to come pool for our football team. It's a great environment. It's important in this city. And those were some goals of ours whenever we took this job. Be relevant in your own city.
Yeah, I would imagine if you're an NFL player and you think about the work that goes into winning a game and how hard it is to win a game in the NFL, especially if you're a member of the New York Jets. If you win a game, not only a game, but you beat what is allegedly a good Raider team, and you don't just beat them, you destroy them. You beat them down. Hell yeah, if you're in New York, you're going to get out and you're going to hit it hard. I would. So I'm not going to say that they're back, although they're playing better. I'm not going to say the Jets are back, but they are back on page 6. And Sam Darnold, is getting the Page Six treatment. Check this out. Quote, this is a Page Six quote. Surging New York Jets quarterback Darnold celebrated his team's Sunday afternoon routing of the Raiders long into the night, but he may have taken on a little too much, quote, jet fuel. Sources tell Page Six. It goes on, quote, they were celebrating like they had just won the Super Bowl, said a spy on the scene. Sam Darnold was wasted, hooking up with some girl. The other guys on the team had to look after him. End quote. And? I mean, you tell me that somebody actually was out drinking in New York and, quote, hooking up with some girl. That happened. That's a thing? That's a story? It's not a story. Sam Darnold, single quarterback for the New York Jets, played his ass off and then went out in the city and allegedly partied his ass off and got with a girl. That's news? That's a story. No, you want a story? That's not a story. Again, I want to stress this. I don't know if that's true or not, but even if it is true, I'm not sure how that's a story. But you want a real story? I'll give you a real story. You want a story? I'm not here to tell any news gathering organization what is and what is not news. But if you want a real story, cover this.
I've had over 40 pizzas in the last 30 days. Livy currently and Mark Shapiro should be in jail. He has no pizza experience. He's never been in the pizza category. I would just say, stay tuned. The day of reckoning will come. The record will be straight.
Why not set the record straight now? I mean, what is it about the record that's not straight?
Stay tuned.
All right, so what that is, you've probably already seen this. If you listen to this program, you probably found that clip already because this cat's been trending on Twitter for hours. Those are the edited highlights of Papa John talking about, among others, my guy Mark Shapiro. Just blurting it out. Mark Shapiro should be in jail. That the day of reckoning is coming. And speaking of days, in the last 30 days, I've had 40 pizzas. That's PJ. Papa John. 40 pizzas in 30 days. And that's pizzas, not slices. Entire pies.
40 pizzas.
40 pies in 30 days. Man, there's a whole lot going on in that clip. A whole lot. Like 40 pizzas in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
This guy said my guy Mark Shapiro is going to be in jail or should be in jail. Mark Shapiro. You know Mark Shapiro. You know my history of Mark Shapiro. Mark Shapiro and I literally came up together. Mark Shapiro was the PA who started with me on Talk 2 on ESPN2. Mark Shapiro was the guy who walked into my office my first week on television and said, you don't know who I am. My name is Mark Shapiro. I'm curious, how do you host a one-hour TV show after hosting a four-hour radio program? How are you prepping this? And I said, I haven't figured it out yet. He said, do you want some help? I said, sure, knock yourself out. And the next thing you know, Shapiro just took control, took over. I remember saying to my agent at that time, I met the most amazing young guy. He's 23. He's going to run this network one day. He will run ESPN one day, I'm telling you. And my agent at CAA at that time said, let me tell you something. You're going to meet a lot of people like that on the way up. I said, listen to what I'm telling you. I've never met anybody like this guy. He will run. He's 23. He's a PA. He's going to run this network one day. He's like the most unusual guy I've ever met. He's brilliant. And he's got crazy it and charisma. And my agent said, all right. Sure enough, Shapiro blows right through me, right to the top of the network, and he ran ESPN for a number of years. And then moved on to Six Flags and worked with Dan Snyder. And ended up on Papa John's board. So Papa John does this interview where literally he's got garlic butter coming out his pores. And that'll happen if you slam 40 pies in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
And he's like just blurting out, Mark Shapiro should be in jail. Oh, okay. Anyway, this is why this guy, that Mark Shapiro, the same guy who was one of the higher-ups at William Morris, and that's a big reason why I'm at William Morris. The same Mark Shapiro that brought me back to ESPN the second time. That guy should, quote, be in jail. Oh, okay, PJ. This is why Papa John is trending on Twitter right now. And if the Papa is trending, that's not a good thing. And yes, I'm aware, clones, the pizza slinger is not the picture of health. Nor does he sound that great either, does he, Alvy?
40 pizzas in 30 days.
Now, I know there have been other incidents in the past when it looks like he's been out celebrating something a bit too much. But we're not here to talk about what happened in the past. It's a sports show, and this guy's talking about food. I'm not even sure why this is a topic at all, but I will repeat this. And he made a point of saying it, so I think it's fair game. He's had 40 pies in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
That dude who used to chuck a football like 300 yards, remember that? He just ate 40 pizzas in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
And can I tell you something? He looks like a guy who had 40 pizzas in 30 days. He sounds like a guy who ate 40 pizzas in 30 days. He sounds like a guy that burned 40 cigarettes in 30 minutes. That could almost be a public service announcement. Instead of, this is your brain on drugs, this is your face on 40 pizzas.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not here to hate on pizza. Or even on that guy's pizza. Although I've never really had it. I mean, I like pizza a lot. I'm not even hating on the Papa for murdering 40 pies in 30 days.
40 pizza.
On some level, I kind of respect it. I respect the hustle. I respect the love. I respect the passion and the hunger for the so-called pizza category. You know what this dude is? He's the original member of the 40-30 club. 40-30. 40 pizzas in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
He is the charter member of the 40-30 club. The only guy to ever do it. If that's true, it's even more impressive than Jose Canseco going 40-40, which is still one of my favorite stats of all time. Imagine that. I mean, I don't care what that guy had coursing through his veins at that time. That guy went 40-40. 40 bombs, 40 bags. And even better, Jose Canseco said at the time, if I had known it was such a big deal, I would have done it every single year. I love that he says like it's a totally normal thing, or even that he's bragging about it. The 40-30 club, I mean. But then again, if I lived to tell that story, I'd be pretty pumped up too. If I eat 40 pies, 40 of their pies in 30 days, and I live to talk about that, yeah, I'd be up in your grill. And yes, I've seen the video. I don't need you people to tell me about the video or how to describe the video. I don't need your take on how it looks, how he looks, how he sounds. I don't need, hey, Rome, did you see how sweaty he is? Has he been bathing in garlic sauce? Again, personal appearance is not show fodder, never has been. I don't care that it looks like that interview was conducted inside of a pizza oven. I mean, the whole thing is a little surprising. I mean, I haven't been caught off that guard or caught off guard like that by the Papa since he bum-rushed our set on Radio Row a few years back, uninvited.
What's up, man? Papa John?
I love your show.
Thank you very much. How are things?
Things are good. Business is good. We're up here at the Super Bowl. You know, we had a great spot with Peyton in the bus.
I don't know that Kurt Warner, Peyton Manning, or anybody else can throw the rock like you can.
I've put the money on
Where'd you get that arm, man? Do they trick that out with photography, or can you really throw the ball 70 yards in the air like that?
I didn't throw 70. I threw 48. I throw football 48 yards.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, a kinder, gentler time when he bum-rushed this show for free pub, and I allowed it because I'm a good guy. Except this is not about how he looks. This is not about how he sounds. The real story here is he murdered 40 pizzas in 30 days.
40 pizzas in 30 days.
And apparently he did so to test it for quality. And he said that it's not good. The pies have gone way downhill. They're not what they used to be when I was here. So the follow-up story is, why was he eating 40 in 30 days to test quality? Wouldn't a slice or two tell you all you need to know? Maybe even a whole pie? One pie? Or did you even have to eat the whole pie, much less 40 of them? Hey, Rome, was he eating 40 pizzas in 30 days or rubbing them on his face? Of course he wasn't rubbing pizza on his face. What kind of an idiot would buy 40 pizzas in 30 days and rub it out on his face? Makes no sense at all. We're not talking about it. But even if we were talking about it, it still would be way more of a story than Sam Darnold going out and getting plastered on, quote, jet fuel and hooking up with some girl in the city. That's not a story.
Will come. The record will be straight.
Why not set the record straight now? I mean, what is it about the record that's
not straight? Can I say something?
Straight?
If getting blasted in New York City is a story, then all of us should be in the Page Six because we all got blasted in New York City a couple of weeks back. Do you need a last-minute gift? O'Reilly Auto Parts has you covered. There are several options for gifts under $20, like a digital tire gauge, a 20-in-1 multi-tool, storage containers, or even a universal backup camera. Or you can get professional quality power torque tool sets starting at only $19.99. And who does not love a gift card? You can even buy gift cards online and pick them up in store. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Another big one right there. Herm Edwards is my guest. Herm, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. How you doing?
Herm, I'm doing great. It's great to visit with you again. The season, Herm, got off to a good start, and then you went through a rough stretch where you dropped four in a row going into Saturday night. You took an early lead. Oregon starts their comeback. What's it say about your team that they dug deep and they found a way to make plays in the fourth quarter and finish that big win?
Well, I think it kind of tells you the character of our team. Very young football team trying to build a program here. And you're right. We got off to a fast start this season. Didn't handle success very well. And we got into a bad slump of losing close games. And this one got that way again in the fourth quarter. We were able to hang on there at the end of the onslaught that they presented. But it says a lot about the kids, you know, to their mental fortitude to get through the fourth quarter like that and able to beat a really good football team.
Yeah, Herm, I want to be clear about this, too. When you mentioned you've got a young team, you've got a team where you've played 32 freshmen. You have started 8 true freshmen. So how huge is it to get a win like that and do it the way you did, given all that youth?
Well, it helps the program. And obviously, going to a bowl also helps the program. And now we have the ability with the kids we're bringing in. I think there's 10 or 12 of them that have actually practiced with us. For the bowl game, can't play. But when you have that many youngsters to win a game like that against a ranked team, says a lot about you know, their fortitude and obviously their ability to understand the moment when things happen in the crunch time. You got to make some plays.
Herm Edwards is joining us. Now, when you and I spoke in August, we talked about the fact that you had a great television job, but you missed coaching. As good as TV is there anything that can match the feeling of a win, like beating number 6 Oregon and seeing your fans storm the field?
Well, I've never been involved in the fan storming, obviously. At one time when we won a championship game in Philadelphia, it got close to that. But, you know, those Philadelphia policemen are they're pretty tough.
You know it.
Let them come on the field when we beat the Cowboys. But it was fun to watch it all happen. The fans celebrating with the players and just the way college football is, you know, the enjoyment that you get to watch for young people, whether they're storming the basketball court or storming the field. When you see it from afar, you always ask yourself, I've never been involved in something like that. And when it took place, I said, this is a pretty good deal here now.
We're talking to Herm Edwards. So when you and I spoke in August, we also talked about Jaden Daniels and the fact that he earned that starting quarterback job as a true freshman. Saturday, he completed 22 of 32 passes, 408 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he did it, Herm, against one of the best defenses in the country. How special is he?
He's got a chance. Jim, he really has a chance. He's unique. He's a unique individual. And we talked about it all week. You know, I told him this. I said, now, look, I said, the quarterback that you're about to play, I said, he's a very good player. He's probably going to be a first-round pick. And people are going to turn the television on, and they're all looking at him. I said, now, you're the little freshman guy. I said, so basically, you're competing against that guy. And so he said, Coach, I get it. And I think the kid did good.
I think the kid did great. So when you said that to him, Herm, when you said, hey, listen, everybody's going to be looking at him and he's going to be looking at you, who's going to play better, how did he respond to that challenge? Or what did he say to you in response to that?
He said, Coach, I understand exactly what you're saying. And I can remember when we were walking down the tunnel before the game, we always give each other a hug and, you know, and we talk. And he said, Coach, I said, you ready for this, big fella? He says, Coach, I'm ready for this. And he sure enough, I mean, the pass on 3rd and 16, that's the one that really sealed the game for us. And we were in a dire strait to move the football and to throw it the way he threw it to Ayuk, who's been tremendous for us as a wide receiver. That said a lot about him.
Arizona State football coach Herm Edwards is joining us. You know, Herm, success is fun. That 5-1 start had to feel great. But how much did you, the coaching staff, and the players learn about each other during that losing streak? As an example, you don't want to go through something like that. You never want to. But were you able to take away positives from that time?
Absolutely. And I think you find a lot about your team. And you find a lot about your staff. You know, and I think the thing we were able to do, we stayed consistent of our message and what we're trying to do here. And, you know, when you go through that, Jim, that losing streak, who it affects is the seniors. Because, you know, they're sitting there going, man, this is going to be my last year playing football, unless they have the ability to go on to the next level. And so you feel like you've dropped some games very close. But then with the big win, obviously, now you feel a little bit better. You get yourself bowl eligible. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing for our program.
And then you've got a great opportunity coming up next. When you look at Arizona, what concerns you the most about them?
Well, in the fact that it's a rivalry game, 120 years, and it goes way back now. And it really doesn't matter what the records are of both parties. It's going to be a physical football game. It generally goes down to the wire. I mean, you look at the one last year, we were down most of that game, and we rallied in the fourth quarter to score 20, and then at the end they had a field goal to make it. If they had made it, they'd have beat us by two. So we were fortunate to get out of there with a win, and I anticipate these guys coming in here, and it's going to be the same kind of game. It's going to get down to the fourth quarter.
Hey, Irm, I think it's an amazing rivalry. I think people outside the area don't really understand and don't appreciate the depth of that rivalry. It is a great, great rivalry. Now, you take it very seriously, but you want to make sure that everybody within the program is still having a good time. So you brought in Candid Camera Friday. Guys in the program absolutely love Candid Camera Friday. Lay it out for me. What is it all about?
Well, during the course of the week, and I did this in pro football too, you know, toward the end of the week you're winding down, and so what we do is I tell our camera guy there's about five or six players I want to make sure we get shots of during practice. And then we basically build it around that, and we'll go back to when they were maybe in high school or wherever it was, and we kind of mimic it. You know, we kind of make fun of what they're doing in practice, and so I kind of orchestrate this deal. And it lasts about after the meeting, we have our meeting to, you know, give them the information what we're doing that day, and then they know before we go out for our walkthrough we're having Candid Camera Friday. So they're all wondering, who did the coach get this week? And it could be coaches too, Jim, and it could be anybody. You know, it's amazing, man. Every Friday, kind of, it's almost like going to the movies for about 5 minutes. They're going to say, what is Coach going to do this week? So it's been a lot of fun.
That's a blast. You know, from the outside, Herm, it's clear how much you love the game of football. You've talked about how you and the coaches are keepers of the game. So what does that mean to you, and what do you want your players to learn and love about the game?
Well, it teaches about life. It really does. There's so many life lessons learned in the game of football, in any sport. But football, kind of unique in this sense. When you think about going into the arena, you got to trust 10 other guys. When you break the huddle, there's 10 guys you got to trust. And everyone has a role, and it's important. Because if not, there's failure involved. And so it's almost like all those other things that you think about, I've got to help my buddies. I mean, I remember that coming out of the huddle as a high school player, as a college player, but even more as a pro player, that I didn't want to let my teammates down. They were counting on me to do my job and to do it well. And I think those are the things in life. You know, we don't do things by ourselves. I mean, everything we've achieved, we've had the help of others to do that. And I think if you understand that, you have a chance to be successful in life.
And then finally, there's more work to be done, to be sure. But when you look back on where things were when you first arrived and how far that program has come, how much fun are you having building that program and taking this on?
Well, I'm having a lot of fun, and that's the reason I came back. And it had to be the right situation for me, and with Ray Anderson being the AD and Dr. Crow, the president, I mean, that was the vision, that we were going to build it from the ground up with a lot of young guys. And our first year here, I only had like 10 scholarships because they were all taken. So this year, Jaden's class, we actually had 24. So now we're going to bring in another 25. So now we're starting to build it, and it's been a lot of fun. A lot of hard work, but it's been a lot of fun.
Arizona State with that win over Oregon on Saturday. Next up, they are hosting Arizona. I love that matchup Saturday night. Herm Edwards is the head coach at Arizona State. Herm, great to have you back on this show. Always look forward to the conversation, and I know it's a big one. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you, my friend. You have a happy Thanksgiving as well, okay?
All right, so it's been a minute or two since I checked in on the Cincinnati Bengals. Why don't we do that right now? I'm looking at them, and from where I'm sitting, they're not good. In fact, they're horrible. They're horrible, and their latest move proves that once again. 3 games after benching Andy Dalton on his birthday in favor of rookie Ryan Finley, the team announced it's going to make another quarterback change. So, who is the new quarterback? Well, let's let a certain 80s movie tell you who their new quarterback is.
The name is Dalton.
That's right. Andy Dalton is back. The Red Rifle. After benching Dalton. Bench the Dalton.
Salt.
Thank you, Alvin. And now it's in the back of my head every time. Bench the Dalton.
Bench the salt.
After benching Dalton and not trading Dalton for no apparent reason, they're going back to him. Also for no apparent reason. Which raises yet another question for the Bengals.
Do you enjoy pain?
Pain don't hurt.
Do you enjoy pain? Do you enjoy pain may as well be the 2019 Bengals team motto. And the answer is yes. Not only do they enjoy pain, they enjoy pointless pain. And then they try to justify the pointless pain. Check out head coach Zach Taylor Sunday talking about rookie quarterback Ryan Finley. All right, so the guy goes out there. They get beat. It's a winnable game. But the young coach has got the young QBs back.
You look across the league at all the young quarterbacks playing. Look at their first 3 games. There's struggles that are going to happen. We always have to look at all of our personnel, but you also got to understand at the same time that there's some challenges there. You know, we're down 2 starting receivers right now, and that's hard for a rookie quarterback. And those other guys are playing their tails off, but we got to give him a chance. That's where we're at right now.
All right, so I respect that. We got a young quarterback. He's getting his head handed to him, but it's tough. We're down starting players. He does not have all his available weapons. There's a learning curve here. Hey, it's tough. You got to stick with a guy. So that was Zach Taylor. This is Zach Taylor on Monday explaining why Finley does not get the extra chance that he just said a day earlier that he would get.
It's not an easy decision anytime we've had to make it, which has been twice this year, but it's in the best interest of the football team right now to do this and get Andy back out there.
So just so I have this straight, Bengals coach, Sunday night it was okay to lose. Less than 24 hours later, they've got to get better, and they've got to get better right now. Come on, Zach. Who are you kidding with that? The best interest of your football team is to lose more games, get the first pick. The best interest of your football team is not to try to win games. Like, don't get me wrong, Ryan Finley was not good. The team never scored multiple TDs in a game that he started. He completed only 47% of his passes. In 3 starts, he had 5 turnovers and 2 touchdowns. In other words, he was perfect. Not only was he not good, he was awful, which is exactly what you need right now. A guy who can go out there and find ways to lose games every Sunday. You see, this guy's the difference between 2-9 and 0-11. If Andy Dalton were playing, they'd probably win those last 2 games. You don't want that. The last thing you want is Andy Dalton going out there and relying on experience and having his personal pride and professional self-preservation kick in so he guts out a win or two. Believe me, it is not going to change how he is seen or how the organization is seen, but it could really damage the organization. A franchise that does not know who the hell they are or what the hell they're doing. You don't want to back into a win or two. They didn't trade Andy Dalton, even though they know he's not part of the future. They didn't trade AJ Green, even though they could have gotten something for him. Instead, they stuck to their guns and they rolled out to an 0-11 record. So, stick to your guns. You've got a plan, work your plan. Or you had a plan, because now inexplicably, they're actually trying to win. You know, I guess on some level I get that. Nobody wants to go 0-16. Nobody wants to go 0-16. However, if you're not the first one to do it, who cares? And you know what's worse than 0-16? 2-14. You know what's worse than 2-14? 3-13. That's a catastrophe. Because then you're trying, and you're trying to save face, and it's only going to cost you that first pick overall. Accept that it's broken. Stop trying to fix it. Leave Finley out there to keep doing what he's doing or not doing. And no, I couldn't care less that this guy's not your quarterback of the future. Neither is Dalton. Yet you're running him back out there. You see, benching Dalton.
Bench the salt.
Thanks, Alvin. Bet. So is Dalton. So is Finley. But benching Dalton for Finley was a great move. It was a bold move. It was a dramatic move because it made you think that the Bengals actually had a plan in place. They were 0-8. There was a cliff right in front of them. They were gunning the engine. Now they're trying to approach that cliff and swerve away. Come on, man. Don't do that. Gun the engine. Head for the cliff. Sail through the air. Finish what you started. Run it backwards. Go 0-16. Embrace the suck. Don't just be bad. Be terrible. Because that's the only chance you will ever have of ever being respectable ever again. Imagine all that heat. Remember all that heat Marvin Lewis used to take for never getting over in the postseason? My man looks like Vince Lombardi right about now. The fact that he did what he did with that organization seems incredible. Looking at what Marvin Lewis did there makes me think that he's one of the greatest coaches ever. What are they doing? They're going back to Andy Dalton after benching him on his birthday.
Bench the salt.
Why? Why? Dalton's got to be like, man, it is my way or the highway.
I'm telling you straight, it's my way or the highway.
I guess that's why you give that guy the football. Mike Hopkins is the head coach at Washington. Mike, it is so good to have you back. How are you?
Jim, how are you, buddy?
Mike, I'm awesome. In fact, I want to re-ask that question. Before we get to your season, I always love catching up with you. How is life? How are you? How was your summer?
Are you kidding me, man? I was in Greece. We went to Italy as a team. I got the sun peeking out of these damn clouds up here in the Pacific Northwest. It's absolutely beautiful. Life is good.
I love it. All right, so what about that trip to Italy? Where did you guys go? And when you've got as many underclassmen as you have, how valuable was that trip?
You know what? It was amazing, Jim. I've been on a few before where you travel like to four different cities in 10 days, and you're in and out of hotels. We tried to stay in two places. We stayed in Rome and we stayed in Florence. We got to be part of the culture, had great food, bonded, played a couple of really good teams, and it was a great experience for the kids.
Well, such great spots too, Rome and Florence. Florence is definitely one of my favorite places ever. Mike Hopkins joining us. So, Mike, you beat San Diego 88-69 Sunday night. That's a game where Isaiah Stewart had 25-7. Jaden McDaniels had 20. Both players came into the program with so much hype. So what do you make of how they've handled that hype and the transition they've made to college basketball? It seems like they made that transition pretty quickly.
Yeah, they're not only great, players, they're great people. They play the right way. They're unselfish. And I think, they're still learning. I mean, we're still getting better. I think our growth potential is, we've got a high ceiling. We're still baby stepping it, But they've handled it pretty well. We played two top 25 teams in the first, six games. It's been a little bit challenging, but I think we've learned a lot, and they just got incredible attitudes. We're just going to keep getting better and better.
Mike Hopkins, the head coach of the University of Washington. Now, when you took over, you made it very clear you were not there to rebuild. You wanted to win right now. In your first season, you won 21 games. In your second season, you won the conference title and you went to the NCAA tourney. So what's it mean to you to see the guys have that level of success that quickly, and especially last season?
Well, I got an incredible staff, and these guys work hard every day on trying to build the culture. And I think, winning cultures, they believe they're going to win every game that they play if, they live a certain way. And these guys, I think, have really bought into it. Like I said, the coaches have worked with them every day. They're starting to believe. Their work ethics are improving. They're getting better in terms of player development, doing well in the classroom, and those types of things, help winning. And I think we're in that place right now where we're still trying to establish our culture, keep strengthening it, especially with the young guys. I think they've really bought in, and we've tried to prove to them if they do these things that we can be a consistent championship-level program year in and year out. And I'm just really proud of these guys right now.
So, Mike, in terms of culture, like every single coach in every single sport that I talk to brings up culture. When you get right down to it, how important is it? For instance, is it just something the coaches like to talk about, or does culture win and does culture make talent better?
I do. I believe it. I believe how you live is everything. And, you know, it's how we came together with the tougher together. You know, it's about, you know, guys who have great work ethics. It's, you know, how you live with each other. It's how you treat your teammates. It's playing for something greater than yourself. And a lot of people say it. I think the strength of culture is not only, you know, the vision of the leader, but also the people that implement it every day. And I got to say, I've got the best staff in the United States of America. These guys on a day-to-day basis are pushing that culture, not only as basketball players, but as men, you know, trying to build these guys on and off the court. And, you know, I think it's like when people talk about the process, process and culture are important, but is my process better than your process? You know what I mean? I think that's the secret sauce. I mean, the words mean something, but then it's the action that's taken every day is I think the most important thing. But I really believe in strong culture for sure.
So, Mike, what's your process? Is that something you can share? Like, how is your process different than the guys you're going up against? Everybody believes in their process.
I think everybody has their different. I mean, I worked with Jim Boeheim. I was part of USA Basketball, and the process that I learned over time is through two, you know, incredible coaches, and that's what we do. And so, you know, defensively, it's, you know, you have your defensive system, you have your offensive system, how we're going to play, and then you have your culture system, which is, you know, what's your, you know, how are you taking care of your body? You know, we have, you know, 45-minute individuals every day in the middle of the day for shooting. You know, we have an incredible strength conditioning program that we really strive to be great at. We've got a nutritionist. And then it goes back to holding these kids accountable and then changing their behavior. And if you get the full buy-in and those guys are all doing it and all their arrows are going in a line in the right direction, you've got a chance to be special. And, you know, you need talent too. Don't get me wrong. But with talent, with strong culture, everybody going the right direction is an incredible way to win games.
Washington head coach Mike Hopkins is my guest. You mentioned Jim Boeheim. Mike, you and I have talked in the past about your decision to leave Syracuse and take the job. And as you said, it was scary, but it was exciting, like getting into a boat and saying, all right, where's America? So now you're in your third season. How much have you grown and learned in that time since you first arrived? How different a head coach are you now?
You know what? I've grown so much. You know, there was so much to learn sitting in that seat, and I prepared for it, but it's never really like doing it. And, I've learned so much, but you know, you always go back to those little gems, that you know, if you're a listener and you're trying to learn all the time, there's so many incredible, you know, stories and situations that I've been able to be a part of as a small fly on the wall. And, you know, it's like, what would Jim Boeheim do? What would Coach K do? You know, you go back to the things that you've learned, the things that have been tried and true over time. And, when you've had those experiences, you can always pull them out. But to be a head coach, I've gotten a great staff that I learn from on a day-to-day basis. And I've got my North Star, which, you know, when things go down and you start thinking of making wholesale changes, you go back to what's tried and true. And so anyway, I've learned so much, Jim. I've grown so much. And it's, I tell you this too, and I know I'm rambling right now. But
not at all. You're good.
No, but you know what's interesting, Jim, is like, you know, everything that I've always wished and dreamed, it's even better than that. And that's when you're living your dream. And so I'm in a great situation. I work for a great boss. I love the school, and it's been incredible.
I think that's incredible. That's unbelievable, Mike. Mike Hopkins joining us. And then you brought in Larry Brown, and you spent some time with him. He spent some time with you and the staff and the team. What was that experience like? And, Mike, I've got to ask, as somebody who's been around the game a long time, going back to your time at Modern Day, how much do you love being around a basketball lifer like Larry Brown?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I played, obviously, for Gary McKnight, who was a legend. I played for Jim Boeheim, who's a legend. I was able to be part of USA Basketball, Coach K, a legend. Coach Gergerich, I think, is the best player development, you know, coach ever, was a legend. And having a guy like Larry Brown come in and watch over your practices and tell you what he thinks and where we're going is just incredible. And, you know, to be able to sit in a room with a guy that's seen so much, have been part of so many situations, it was just incredible for the whole staff. It was incredible for our players. You know, we were grateful for him to take the time and do it. And anytime you can learn from the best, he's just a hooper, you know. He can talk basketball for hours and tell stories, and it just helps you grow, helps you learn, and puts things in perspective for sure.
He is the ultimate basketball lifer. He really is something else. Now, you know, your expectations as a head coach are not going to change, and I just touched on this, but when you've got a lot of underclassmen, maybe your expectations don't change, but does your approach change?
Well, it does, because sometimes I think the biggest thing, I assume a lot, you know, when you, you know, when I was at Syracuse for so many years, it had been built over time. And when you, you know, take over a program, you're trying to implement that culture, that system, those things. And sometimes you can assume a little bit. And, you know, sometimes you have to be able to slow down and really do a better job teaching. And that's the one thing that I've learned is I can't assume anything with these guys, even as how talented they are. You know, you've got to go at a fast pace, but you got to keep them. You got to teach them. You got to watch film with them. Some teams are different. When you have experience, you know, it's a little bit less. But when you have, you know, youth and inexperience, a lot more teaching for sure.
Mike Hopkins, my guest. Mike, as somebody who's always looking to learn and grow, some of that is through reading. I saw recently you mentioned that you read Give and Take, Why Helping Others Drives Our Success by Adam Grant. I'm always looking for a good book. What did you take away from that book? Why was that such a good book?
Well, I think it's you know, it's such a nature to be, you know, me. And when you really look at it, you know, I learned from my father, you know, it's always, you know, giving is one of the greatest gifts that you can have, you know, giving, sharing. And I think that's the one thing that's great about teachers. You know, it's not about me. It's about us and how can we grow? How can we grow as a family? How can we grow as a team? And how can we help you get better? And that's the greatest reward as a teacher. It's priceless. Obviously, we have to win games and do those things, but you have to put things in perspective. And I just think, you know, having a culture of giving in our program is what I want to be able to give these guys as a gift as they move forward. And you got to change the behaviors and you got to teach it on a day-to-day basis. But an incredible book.
Mike Hopkins, my guest. Mike, finally, you spent some time, obviously, with Melo at Syracuse. If this is, in fact, his final act, how do you think Melo is going to look and do with Portland?
You know what? I've he's one of the greatest players, obviously, that I've ever been around, but one of the greatest people. You know, I used to always, when people say he wasn't a winner, he won a national championship in high school. He won a national championship college. The impact that he made, not only in the school at Syracuse, but the people and who he was around was incredible. And let me tell you, one of the most loyal people in the game. And when you have a guy, even with USA Basketball, won all the gold medals, sacrificed, scored, and did everything, just to be able to have, you know, his swan song and have his ending come to how it should be with all these great players like Dwayne Wade and these guys who got, you know, what they did for the game, they were able to be applauded. And Melo's a winner. Melo will help. He is at the end of his career, but to be able to see him back in the NBA is incredible. Portland, Neil O'Shea, just incredible organization. So I hope it all ends up great for him because he deserves it.
Mike Hopkins, Washington is 5-1. They're number 22 in the coaches poll. Next up is South Dakota, December 2nd. Mike, it is so good to get caught up. You know I love having you in the jungle. Mike, great to have you back. Thank you very much.
You are a beast, Jim Rome.
Good night now.